You're listening to episode 152 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, the dog days of the tech summer. Episode 152 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is August the 24th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my music video award winning brother, James Furlough. That was a bit more of a tongue tie than I had expected it to be.
Music award winning, huh? So is there some sort of contest recently that I should know about?
Some sort of a contest. Currently, the music television music video awards are going on.
As we're doing this right now,
it's happening. Wow. And the reason why it's worth mentioning is because for some, MTV is quite good at music television. I like to emphasize what their name stands for, since this is like the 1 hour a year that they actually do anything that has anything to do with music anymore.
Burn.
But they have quite the capacity for generating controversy and getting people to talk about them, so that when people are listening to our show tomorrow morning and the rest of the world is talking about the MTV Music Video Awards and twerking or some other crazy stupidness that happen, we'll be there too. We have no idea what the controversy is. We don't know what everybody's going to be talking about, but I just want to make sure that you don't feel like you're being left out. Just know it is impending. This is an official Furlough Bros prediction.
Gotcha.
But.
Gotcha. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I have some news of my own to I can't believe I'm going to say this. This is the weirdest thing I think I've ever said.
What's that?
I get yo. My wife is just like, what? She's telling me it's the dumbest thing ever. No, actually not.
I'm going to be totally honest with you. I've been using yo all week long. I kind of get it too.
Well, Matthew gets it too, so take that. She's rolling her eyes, calling us nerds. No. At least for me, what I've found is, and I guess what I don't understand is, why was Facebook Poke not successful?
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. And because it's nice to sometimes to be like, oh, I've got 10 seconds to kill. I'm not going to read an article. I'm not definitely not going to check my email. You know what I mean? I'm not going to play a game, but I want to do something that's going to take me roughly 10 seconds to do. I'm not going to send you a Snapchat or, just a hey, whatever, but just go like, poke, done. And then I close it. There's something satisfying about that. It's weird.
Yeah, it's, I still have, there are still people that I actively engage in poke wars with, and they've slowed their pace over the decades, but they still exist. And it's funny. I mean, like, I thought this morning as I was getting, as I was surviving, I had a bit of a rough weekend. We decided to celebrate my birthday yesterday. Have you ever been to the Winchester Mystery House?
Yes, I actually wrote a report about that my first week in college, because we had to pick a local monument, place of interest, and write about it. And nice. That was the one I chose.
Nice. This was the first time I'd ever been. I remember talking to our parents when we were like 12 and saying, I've never been in the Winchester Mystery House. I'd like to go. And our dad telling me, it's pretty boring and dumb. So what you really should do is do it as a date. I was like, that's brilliant. And it's just never materialized. So
and to be clear, it's next to a movie theater that we go to or went to. I was past tense for me all the time.
I literally visit. I go across the street once a week at least. I mean, it is central to where I hang out. Yeah, I mean, it's the first time I've ever actually gone in. And
nice.
I went in with a fair amount of sobriety. sort of added an extra level of excitement to the dangling edges and the absurd complexity of the building, because you have no idea where you're going. And it was a day. Anyways, how I got off on this topic was, as I was thinking this morning about the show, I was like, every time, I don't know if you've noticed, but I always tried to give you like a heads up of, hey, I'm ready, or just make sure we're actually doing the show. And I was thinking, today I'll yo James. He'll get it. He'll know that I've made the jump, and you managed to beat me to the punch, but to the yo.
I had that exact same thought, and I was like, and when I got online, I saw that you were online, and I was like, oh man, he hasn't pinged me yet. Okay, I got to get this out before I'm actually ready. Because if I wait until I'm ready, he'll have yo'd me.
Yeah. You know my timing. Top man, it's like you said. I get it. I definitely get it. I do want to mention this before we move on a little bit, talking about movies. So one movie that I hope you didn't see this weekend was When the Game Stands Tall. Have you been paying attention to this movie?
I will
at
never
all?
Watch that movie.
Me neither. It's a dumb movie.
Never watched
it's
that
awful.
Movie.
The good news is, James, neither did anybody else.
Yes! Well, that's kind of spoiler. They lose.
They lose. They deserved it.
Man. Yeah, they did. Now, I was reading something that was talking about how we all have stories about being next to somebody famous.
Yeah.
You know, we all have, like, it's not almost famous stories, because that's not really what it is, but it's like, essentially close famous.
I was standing in line this today to get my dinner, and on the radio was the song Headstrong by Trapped, and I couldn't stop myself from telling the cash register lady, you know, I went to high school with these guys. Those kinds of stories.
Yes. It's funny, we all have those, and it's just kind of like we all know somebody who's famous, or you know, has done something like that, and it was a fascinating talk about, you know, how we gauge our importance and then society and stuff like that, which I'm like, well, no, it's a talking point, and it's, you know, an icebreaker, and that's allowed. What were we talking about before this? I'm totally...
De La Salle and their stupid...
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. So my... it's not that... You know, it's not a claim to fame, but I actually got to see the team and hang out with the team as part of my football team.
Yeah.
We were both on the local television show at the same night for being awesome. We both teams went undefeated that year, so that was back during their win streak. There's obviously has already been, like, 6 or 7 seasons long. Mine was like the first or second, I can't remember now, but first. You know, so
I can't remember. That's awesome.
I just had to think about it. But yeah, just kind of like, I remember going, wow, these guys they're pretty good. Oh yeah, P.S. A couple players who used to go to my school suddenly were at their school. No, they never recruit. Never. That doesn't happen.
Yeah. You know what's really funny about the whole thing, and I realize this, every time I encounter this, I realize how powerful it is, and I think it's interesting that other people don't deal with this thing that I deal with as quite as powerfully, but I think it's more common than we'd like to admit, I guess. But it's like, on Thursday, I was using my favorite dating app, Hinge, and there was a girl, you know, you're basically, is it hot or not?
Tends to happen with dating apps.
Exactly. But, well, you know, for some people, this depends on the app. Oh. Yes, I know what Grindr is. I also started watching the show Silicon Valley this week.
Oh yeah.
And it's fantastic.
That's on HBO, isn't it?
Yeah, I had to buy it.
Gotcha.
But it's one of the favorite,
but my had favorite to, quotes.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines from the first episode is, I know what Grindr is, as they're trying to explain it. But anyways, but this girl, you know, they give you the education history and stuff. And I'm not so shallow that I only vote on looks. it's the 98% of what I vote on, but it's not the only thing I vote on. If there's a question, I'll let it be pushed by what schools you go to and stuff. So I like to look at schools. And I just in general, I like to judge, like prejudge these girls, how smart are you? And
this is going to be good. All right.
Okay, so I saw this one girl, and very cute. Good pictures. Looked like something I was interested in. I looked at her educational history. Went to Saratoga High School. I almost swiped no. I should have, but I didn't, because there was this part of me that was like, oh, I got to see where this goes. So I hit yes. So she likes me back. And I'm like, well, now I got to talk to her. I mean, this is just, I gotta see where this goes.
Because it's so confronters.
Exactly. Well, it was so funny because I ended up
And by the way, for those of you listening who have no idea, Saratoga was the rival school to where we went, and our own coach instilled a Hitler-esque regiment for hating people from Saratoga.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
It's no joke. He even admitted at one time that he had studied Mein Kampf and applied those principles to our team.
Oh, yeah.
Very effectively.
Yeah, and it worked. It was so funny because I was like, so Friday night, that's like the next day, the day before we're supposed to celebrate my birthday, I'm hanging out with one of our cousins. It's kind of like we're just having a good Friday night. And Timmy goes, dude, we should go to Saratoga for dinner. I was like, that sounds awful. Why would we do that? He's like, oh, come on. I never get to eat there. I was like, okay, fine. And so
it's awful.
We drove through the town.
It's pretty straightforward.
I just made fun of them the whole time. I mean, I can't even bring myself to like do my normal thing of where I can like break character for a second and be honest, like, oh, I don't really hate them. No, I actually like feel uncomfortable when I'm there, which is so weird. It freaks me out so bad. Like
I told you my story. The college that I ultimately went to, so Saratoga's colors are red and white. Horrible. And we were taught to hate the color red. I mean, that's like day one. You were not allowed to wear the color red.
Yeah.
Period. Weird. So, the school I went to was Cardinal and Gold. And Cardinal is in the red family.
It is definitely in the red family.
And I was like, do I want to go to the school? I'm judging this school based on its color. And ultimately, I was like, well, it's not really red. It's Cardinal. I might be able to get away with this.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. I even told him that, too. I was like, dude, I almost didn't go to it because it was red. And he goes, well, that's a dumb reason.
Yeah, our coach. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, wait, what?
I know. Maybe. Well, he's – yeah, I mean, he –
You got to understand, too. He played at Berkeley.
Yeah.
Who's our rival is Stanford. Yeah. His color is red.
This and the truth is, James, this story is probably really fun for anybody who lives in the Valley.
Yeah, that's true.
For all of our other listeners, this is probably a kind of boring section. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say we are not going to talk about high school sports in the color red. And it's not what we're here to talk about this week. This week, like every week, we're going to be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations dealing back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
Yeah, I work for HP, whose primary color is blue.
Yes.
However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Nice.
Yeah, it is.
So if you want to follow us throughout the week, see pictures that we post online and stuff, and do that sort of a thing, we got a couple of social media sites that we participate in. Me, it's my Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow, one word. My Instagram is NextWiggin4.
I am at James Furlow on Twitter, jamesfurlow.com, James Furlow elsewhere.
You know what? And I'm going to get crazy, James. For Limited only, my yo is NextWiggin4. So if you want to check that out, NextWiggin4. You can yo me all you want.
And feel free to yo the hashtag Furlough Bros.
Yeah, exactly.
I've done it twice already.
Nice.
Have you done it yet? That's the real question.
I actually didn't figure out how to do it.
Let's see. There's been two yos. So what you do, I figured this out, is on the yo page, you know how there's that plus button on the bottom?
Yeah.
You plus that and it says to type in a username. Don't type in a username, type in the hashtag. I figured it out by accident because I was like, maybe I can search for it, and then I hit the thing and it did it. I was like, hey, yo.
So cool. You did FURLOBROS?
Yeah.
Okay, good, because that's what I did.
All caps.
It's hard to not do caps in on yo.
I know. There was a couple times where I fought against it, and you will do caps.
That's not how this is going to work. It's not part of our lexicon.
Yeah, so let's see here. Can I refresh it or something? No, apparently not. I don't know how that works. Here, I'll close the app, turn it back on, thinking. Two Yo's.
It's that simple.
That's all right. Anyways, look us up on Yo. Mine is the same.
Everywhere, which is?
James Furlow.
There we go.
Proud of it.
Cool.
All right, I'm going to go.
No.
So here's the deal.
Wait. Furloughbros.com. Yeah, if you want to go to, check out, we're almost there, James. We also got our website. We put all of our clicks and links there, all the videos, all the YouTube information, all the what's that thing called? The
internet
podcast. Thank you. All the podcasts, the whole internet can be searched from our website, which is not.
I don't know if that's true. No. You can do a lot of searching.
That's true. So yeah, if you want to go, check it out, furloughbros.com. That's the place. That's the center of the universe. Go and check her out.
Maybe not the universe, but at least the internet.
Yeah, well.
Anything worth reading or listening to.
Exactly.
Okay, so, as you know, I have had it's an on again, off again, temptation of Android.
Yes, I do know.
Yeah. And this week, Google destroyed one of my big reasons for being interested in Android.
Interesting.
Yeah. So shame on them, I guess. And yeah, so I'm probably not going to get Android now.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
there was a chance to begin with.
Dude, I know. Well... there was a chance that I was going to get one as a secondary device because of this.
Okay. All right.
And now I'm not going to.
I want to hear.
Yeah. So, Photosphere.
Okay. Yeah. It's cool. I got the app.
Yeah. It's awesome. And because I had a friend who had an Android phone and I borrowed it. And I was like, all right, let me see how this thing works. And it was genuinely awesome. I ended up doing some huge workaround to get it to work on the iPhone. There was a Microsoft app that they had that lets you take 360 things, and then you could export that. Then you had to import it into Google's Make It Work For Us thing, and then you had to import that into their Photosphere thing, and then you could make it live. Or if you had an Android, you'd take the picture and say upload. A little easier.
It is a bit.
Yeah. And so I was like, well, I guess I figured out the workaround, but man, it'd be nice to have it all just kind of built in. And now it is. They announced it for iOS. And I guess it's one of those where they were like, they probably figured they're not going to convert a ton of people over to Android because of that, and they'd rather have the data.
Yeah.
And so I did two practice ones, like maybe a month or two ago now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, middle of summer. I did one in my kitchen and one in my living room. And I went through the entire process and uploaded them, and you can link them together so you can literally do like this spin around and then click through to the other room and it'll zoom you into the other room.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And so I've had like 100 views on both of those. And,
nice.
Which is probably not saying a lot for Google, but, because they get billions.
Yeah, but for you.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, wow, that's almost creepy because that's my living room. And I just did it one day. I didn't actually clean. And so, my ultimate goal is to use it with my rentals.
Right.
Virtual tours, essentially. Let people click through, look around, and they can see the entire thing. And so that's why I was...
Your Oculus Rift?
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to, like I said, I was thinking about getting an Android device with a good camera, and I've just business expense it out and not worry about it. I don't have to anymore.
It's true.
Pretty cool.
It's funny. I mean, there's another app that was is doing basically the same thing called Bubble that I had.
Yeah, that one's cool too.
Yeah, they're all really cool, and it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, I mean,
you can't export it though, which is lame.
It's true. It goes back to that idea though that in my opinion that, you know, Google really views themselves as a server-side programming company, you know? That's what they do. That's what their bread and butter is. And, yep. You know, whereas Apple sees themselves as a hardware ecosystem company. And if they need to keep software proprietary in order to keep you in the ecosystem, they're going to do it, you know? And it's the reason why, you know, and it's emblematic of the difference between the two companies. It really is. And what's interesting to me is that it's working really well for both companies. You know, there's not a clear right or wrong. You know, I have a feeling that, you know, in 20 years, you won't have any more of an answer to whether that's a good strategy or a bad strategy than you do today, you know? I'm glad for it because I use most of my, you know, one of our cousins just started working for Google, and, she was blown, I was about to do the dumbest thing I was ever said. Younger than me, but older than Chelsea, as though, you know, saying Chelsea's name is any less terrible than saying Katie's name. But,
what's she doing for him? Is she still in the recruiting department?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, very, it is exciting. Very cool. But she was like,
blown. So, is she going to get us a job, or what's the deal? Probably me more than you, since she's working. Probably on the business dev side.
She's working on it. She's actually trying to. So I've told you my strategy for my next job is to. I don't want to find my next job. I want to find my next boss. She's going to help me try to set up some of those pre-lunches or pre-meals where I
informational interviews.
Informational interviews where I buy the meal and, you know, and start those conversations with the guys that I really want to talk to. Johnny Lee is on that list. You know, but if there was anybody who could get me that connection at this point, it's her. So, you know, shoot for the stars.
Very cool.
The worst thing that can happen is you hurtle into space for the rest of your life, never colliding with another physical body. If you don't reach it, you know, it's
which probability speaking, you will.
Yeah, that's hurtle forever aimlessly.
Yeah, there was a What If by XKCD this last week.
Yeah.
That guy was talking about what's the chances of hitting something in space if you randomly shot a laser of infinite strength at some random degree. And he was like, well, you have a 60% chance of hitting the Earth. and then he was like, and then next to that is the moon. He's like,
the fact that he includes that in his calculation. I mean, just for, since you weren't clear about shooting it at the sky.
yeah. He's like, you're gonna hit the Earth, and then and I love it. He's like, and it's a little, no, maybe it was like 48%. You know, something where he's like, it's a little less than 50.
Yeah,
because of the curvature.
Right.
And you're like, great.
Thanks.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Randall.
And that's the kind of thing where you could tell, he took that into account.
Yeah.
And he was then talking about the moon.
That's like the t-shirt that says it graphs the black versus white on the shirt, and it shows you the graph.
Which I own, by the way.
And he actually made different shirts for each size shirt because the ratio changes per shirt. It wasn't it, which
sense.
Is just... Anyways.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but his point is he was like... To hit the moon, I'd have to look it up to get the exact percentage, but it was like less than 10%. I mean, like close to like a 1% type thing. And he was like, and the sun is even smaller. And he's like, the majority of the time, you will hit nothing.
Forever.
And he goes, and if you think about it, this makes logical sense. Because if the sky was really full of stuff, it wouldn't be black at night.
Right. Which is that's actually how, what's his name? That one guy that can't, he talks through a computer.
Stephen Hawking.
Thank you. That's
he's got a movie coming out. November 7th.
I'm actually really looking forward to that movie. But yeah, that was one of the, like, it's like the opening chapter of A Brief History of Time. Brief History of Time. Cause it's Universe in a Nutshell is his other one. But where it's like the opening chapter where he talks about the idea of You know, how do we know that the universe isn't infinite? It's not infinitely that it has a finite amount of matter, because if it weren't, there'd be no such thing as black sky. There has to be ultimately a finite amount, and a rather small amount compared to the amount of space that's out there, which is fascinating. How do we get onto this topic? I feel like we are so off track.
Well, we're talking about Google and something. I don't know.
Yeah, working for Google.
Does it matter?
What was the original topic we were talking about? Oh, the
Photosphere.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
But anyways, Photosphere, awesome. If you got an iOS device, check it out. If you have an Android device, yeah, I know. Welcome to the party.
Yeah.
Feels good to be in it.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to use it now regularly, and it's going to be awesome. It's probably still going to be more work than I want it to be. Now I'm looking into like one of those. How do I get a a tripod that let me spin it in 360 and make it easy.
I'm glad we were on the same page, because that was the one thing that I felt like I really needed, was something that was like something that would swivel on a stick and could do the rotating the correct way, and so you could like do it automatically and have it be really stable and really well built. But that's cool. It's definitely cool. So maybe we'll talk about that offline. Video game, this current generation of video games, full on, we are in the midst of it. The race has been set afoot, and there is a clear, I don't want to call it a winner, but there's a clear leader in the competition of the three primary systems, Wii U, your Xbox One, and the PlayStation 4, and Sony is running away with it like mad. They sold like 10 million systems in the last month, and they're just doing great. I mean, just really, really, really having some stellar sales, and it is completely freaking them out. It's freaking them out. It's
actually those kind of freaky dreams.
Right? Well, the problem is this. The system is selling so much better than they could have possibly expected, which sounds like great news. But their problem is that they have these like really, really complicated forecasts that they do. For the lifetime of a system. And a lot of what happens is they actually plan on what games to sell when. Based on when they think different parts of the market are gonna sweep in. So it's like they say the hardcore gamers are gonna step up first, and they're gonna pay the most for the big launch titles and for the system. So you want to bring people in, get the most that you can, have a couple of really AAA game releases early on. The first year have a bunch coming out and sort of go with that group. Then as the market starts to mature and you saturate the hardcore gamers, and you want to start lowering the price, offering different kinds of models, bringing in, the great example of this is the PlayStation 3, because the PlayStation 3 did terribly with the hardcore gamers early on, but ultimately ended up, keeping pace and especially like the last few years outsold the Wii, pretty much because the Wii didn't really evolve and it saturated its market really early on, whereas the PlayStation 3 kept evolving. It kept evolving with the specs, the overall quality, the price, most importantly, and the types of games that were being released in order to hit a different part of the market. And they're basically like, they come up with these really big models and they come up with all these release dates, and they have to do tons of planning in order to make sure that the system has the momentum and has the longevity that it requires, and they're terrified that they're eating their cake too fast. Their concern is, and the biggest problem here is that it's like, it's possible, and I have my theory on what's going on, it's possible that this is all great news for them, that they're just running away with it and they're going to continue to build momentum and continue to go forward. But their concern is that for some reason, all the hardcore gamers decided to buy the system at the same time, and it's going to saturate the market really quickly for the system, and then there's not going to be anybody to buy the games next year. And as it slows, that could give Xbox the upper hand. And as a company that still makes good money on the PlayStation 2, they're very, very aware of the importance of playing the long game on consoles, having long development cycles, getting a platform that game developers feel like they can develop games for a decade or two, as opposed to just a couple of years. That's worth a tremendous amount of money to the company. And so they're really trying to figure out at this point, what's going on? Why is everybody buying the system? Because if something's changed, they have to adjust what, you know, something has changed, something is different. They have to figure out what it is so they can adjust their models to kind of keep pace with who's buying their game system and why. My thought is this. I think it came down to there wasn't a huge difference between the PlayStation and the Xbox. There is a really marked difference in performance between the Wii U and the Xbox and the PlayStation. The biggest difference between the Xbox and the PlayStation, I mean, they look the same, they perform the same. The biggest difference is was the $100 discount that you got buying the PlayStation. And I think Microsoft really kind of, they worried people a lot with all of their rules and stuff that they were doing with DRM early on. And it just kind of put a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. But they ended up sort of running away with the early buyers. And I feel like, you know, people are, when it comes to video game systems, we're all kind of lemmings, you know? You buy what your friends are buying. And you follow the crowd because you want to be able to play with your friends. You want to be able to talk with your friends. You want to make sure you're all on the same page. You want to make sure that the system that you buy is going to get the best AAA games because you've got the biggest system in the world. I say all that to say the reason why that's my theory is because that might have happened to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you the proud owner of a PlayStation 4?
I was hanging out with a bunch of friends over the last couple of weeks, and they've been talking to me about all these different games that are coming out, specifically Destiny, which is the next game coming out from the Bungie, the company that made Halo, and they're really excited about it. It looks awesome. I wanted to be able to play with them. I was trying to figure out how to be able to do that, and they just kept telling me, like, just go buy one. I'm like, I'm not going to go buy one. It's $400 for the system. It's another $60 for the game. If I get another controller so I can have somebody sit in the room with me and play, there's that. I could use one of my 27-inch monitors, but who wants that? I'm going to need a 42-inch TV screen. Like, this is a huge capital expense in order to build up this ecosystem.
Do you have a 42-inch television?
I don't.
Okay.
I managed to. I was going a little bit on the absurd. I'll admit in the total price, but my point was it's one of those things that's really easy to get carried away on. You know, okay, yeah, I can easily pay the $400 for the system. That's fine. That's not a problem. Number one, I just don't play enough video games to really justify it, $400 on a video game system. But it's just there's a whole ecosystem of cost that's going to kind of build on itself. I was just like, I don't want to sink that much money into something that I can't guarantee I'm going to use that much. Then it happened to be my birthday, and I ran into even a little, you know, more cash that was somewhat unexpected. And I have a friend who works for Best Buy, and he's able to get some pretty killer deals on different stuff. And so when all was said and done, I paid out of pocket about how much I would pay for, you know, a weekend of goofing off with friends. I decided
either that you have amazing weekends or it was a pretty good deal.
Yeah. It's a little of column A, a little of column B. So I went for it, and my I didn't even have to buy my first game. I got a birthday present for the I got it as a birthday present. I got Watch Dogs, which is a piece of intellectual property that what's his name? He's been on the show with us before.
Keegan?
No, the other one. Your friend. David Perry was really excited about it when it got announced. And David Perry was excited enough about it to get me excited about it. So, you know.
He gets excited about all games.
Oh, so. Yeah. But
no, that's cool. That's cool. So you got a gamer tag that you're willing to shout out there, or what's the? How does that work?
I don't know. I think so. I've got next. It's probably Next Week in Four. Knowing me, no, it might be Captain Furlough. Mm. It's one of those two. It's one of those. You know what? I'll figure it out and I'll put it I'll put it on the thing so you can.
Cool.
You can gamer tag me if you want. But yeah, I took the plunge. You know what the best part about it was, James? I started telling people, I actually think I'm going to do this. As I was like figuring out, you know, to make sure I could afford it, that I was being, you know, somewhat responsible. Yeah. And I had three friends that went and bought one this week too, because, well, Furlough's getting one. Obviously, that's the winner. I was like, wow. Oh, now, like, I don't know. I don't know anything more than anybody else, but I do feel pretty good about that. At least my friends are getting dragged along with it. And the one friend or one of my friends who bought an Xbox One couldn't stop making fun of us for it, because you could tell he was somewhat disappointed that that he's the only one with the Xbox.
Wow.
Hey, man, early adopters, just buy another one. Come on, now you can afford
it. Yeah, that's how that works.
Exactly.
So what's one of your favorite features about it, and what's one thing that it does that drives you nuts?
So far, I think one of my favorite features about it is the graphics are stellar. I will have to give them that. I'm not a big graphics fan, but what I'm a really big fan of is not having any lag or stuttering when I'm playing. And it's really, really clean and crisp. It's all HD content, so it looks really clear. And when you're playing and you're trying to do, like, you know, fancy stuff with busy games, it's really remarkable how quality the image is, which I'm a big fan of, and especially games like Halo and the forthcoming Destiny. I'm very excited about that. As far as things that it does that drive me nuts, costs a lot. You know, PlayStation Network costs $50 a year, which really isn't that bad, but you have to pay for it all at once, and it's just like, you know, it's. I haven't gotten the second controller. I haven't pre-ordered Destiny yet. I'm still on the 2-week free PSN stuff. So if I get a second controller, so I can play Destiny with somebody sitting in the room with me, and I get, you know, PlayStation Network, it's another $150 than the next, and it's even more than that, because the game's 60 and the controller's 60, so it's another, you know, $170 in the next month. It's ridiculous, but you know, whatever.
Huh.
C'est la vie. You know what I think is really interesting is that I've actually done a lot of reading on we've talked about it on the show, but the cost per game, per system over time and stuff, and it just feels like everything's so expensive. But if you adjust for inflation, these systems really are right in the, like, within 10% up or down of every generation that's come before them. They're not more expensive, you know, from an inflation perspective, which just blows my mind that we were able to afford as many game systems as we did growing up. Like, I feel like I can't justify this as an adult with a job and, like, nothing else to do with my money. How did we justify that as kids? It's craziness. How did we afford it? But I don't know. So it's fun.
Cool. I'm excited. That's exciting.
I'm very excited. I've decided that what I need to do is I need to actually put it on my calendar that at least a couple hours a week, one night a week at least, I sit down and I play video games, because it's a really dumb idea to spend this much money on video games, but it is the dumbest idea possible to spend this much money on video games and then not play it because you're off doing other things. So I'm going to work it into the schedule.
I love it. I need to find time in my calendar to play video games.
Yeah.
It's usually you hear that about, like, working out or...
Right, yeah.
Need to find time to read my Bible. I mean, play video games.
Yes, yeah. Well, I guess it's a statement. I have some level of maturity, I suppose, if it's, you know... This is the tough one for me, but...
Yeah. Well, it was funny. I was going to make this comment later on, but I'll move into it right now.
Yeah, let's go for it, man.
That I can feel that I'm getting older.
Yeah.
And which is related to what I've said, I think, a few weeks ago, where there's a few new things that came out, and I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, normally, my response used to be, and download and sign up and you know, oh, this is cool, and now I'm doing it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like it took me a couple months to get on Yo, and you know, it was like, man, I should have just signed up day one.
Yeah.
And so I've found myself doing that with About Me. And so I have an About Me page because that was back in the day where I signed up for anything and everything. And life is good. So if you go to aboutme.com/, let's see, what would I have used for my username on that? It might be James Furlow. Otherwise, it's James Furlow. And
are you sure?
It could also be aboutme.com. No.
What?
No, it's about.me.
Oh.
/
Okay, I gotcha. All lowercase? Oh, yeah.
Sure,
Albany, Oregon.
Doesn't matter.
Look at the pup.
Look at the dogs. Yeah, that's right. Vin Pub's in a Superman costume. And then a picture of me and kind of the three things that I'm involved in. So, and actually, if you go to jamesfrillo.com, which is connected to Tumblr, there's an About Me section. When you click on that, it's actually a link that takes you to this About Me page. Gives you a little bit more. It's a soft resume, if you will. And if you want the real deal resume, you go to LinkedIn. So, About Me is expanding, though. And like I said, I looked at it. I thought about filling it out and went, eh, maybe not. Because I'm getting older. But this is something that I think you would actually be very interested in. So this is me just telling you, because I know that you, you know, are interested in an online resume and how that works. And
yeah.
And so anyways, they are adding something called backstory, which I'm kind of like, essentially it allows you to add your professional and educational background, which I'm like, yeah, that's called a resume, but we'll call it backstory. That's cool. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so what's cool about it is that it looks good. You know, LinkedIn is very, you know, it's black and white, a lot of text. Sure, you can add projects and pictures, I guess, but it's very structured, you know?
Yeah.
And theirs is definitely designed more for people who are creative and want to add a little bit more flair, but also have the substance.
Nice.
And so you get someone like me where you saw what I did. I highlighted the three main activities that I'm involved in, and they were like, well, why don't we devote a section to your background, and then you could spend that section talking about more like your philosophy in life and maybe highlighting one or two big projects or something. And then if they want more details about what it is that you do, then you scroll down and that's there. I think their pages are cool, honestly, because you do get that big picture there. And I haven't used mine as a professional purpose just because... Well, you can tell because I have a picture of my dog.
Yeah.
There. An awesome picture, by the way, but a picture nonetheless. But I could see it where they're definitely headed down that track of like, no, we want this to be a professional landing page for your identity on the internet and your full identity, not just your name and a picture, but yeah.
I like it. I like it. I'll definitely check this out. You know, one of the things I like to do, James, when I set up a site like this, I don't know if you've noticed on like Twitter and Facebook stuff, I'm a big fan of using starscapes as my background pictures, which I think makes me seem sort of science fiction-y and science-y because I'm all, you know, it's astrophysics. It's awesome. But you want to know the real reason why I do it, James?
Because of our grandpa?
That is part of it. But the biggest reason why I keep coming back to it is because you can Google starscape high resolution and get these ridiculously high resolution starscapes super fast, like front page, and they're clean, they're easy to use, and they look beautiful, and you just throw them up on your screen, and like, and they do require no editing, super low friction. they just like, they fit all the really, like, they fit all the requirements at the easiest. It works every time. It's awesome. So,
that's a good reason.
Don't be surprised if my big splash page background picture is a starscape. Sort of, yeah. My thing at this point. But cool. I like it.
Yeah. I like it too. You go next, and I'll go again.
Okay. So speaking of stupid apps, Yo
no
is
such thing.
Yeah, Yo is obviously one of those ones that is. Yeah, I mean it's weird. It's how does this work? But it's working. There's another one.
It's a weird interface, I'm not gonna lie. Though I have been getting the jokes of Yo's, and those are pretty fun.
Oh yeah.
Yo yeah.
Yo yeah. Oh my gosh. So there's this app that somebody came up with, and it's somewhat simple. It's called the Shakedown. And I really want to get some friends using it. But basically what it is you sign up and you get points, like 10,000 points. And then what you do is you sign up with your friends, you hook up with your friends, and then you target one of your friends, and you start to shake your phone. And when you shake your phone, you're doing a shakedown. You're stealing their points. And it's just sort of a competitive, you trying to compete with everybody and steal each other's stuff, steal each other's points. That's it. The brilliance of it, though, and I love this, is you can, if you want, you know, like let's say you and I are getting pretty competitive, and I sat around shaking my phone, you know, messing with you for a long time, gained some points back, but I got to go into a meeting. It's time for you to strike back and drain my accounts while I'm busy. I can, for 99 cents, pay protection money on the shakedown and lock my account so people can't steal my points.
And people probably pay money. That's the crazy part.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Shake your phone, steal points, be happy.
It's weird. It's weird. It's one of those, like, and it's funny, this article that I linked to, this is the worst app in the world. You can tell it's actually one of his friends that built the app, and he thinks it's really funny, and they're trying to come up with a way to get people to notice and to download their app, because a lot of Yo's success isn't in its simplicity or its ingeniousness. It's in its the fact that it caught attention. You know, and that's the trick, is if you can catch attention. So they're trying to catch some attention with a really dumb app. But it's an interesting question about what's going on right now with apps and stuff, because it's like, you know, is there a bubble? Is the one question that everybody keeps asking. And no.
Done. Next okay. question.
I'm glad it's so easy to you, for you. But
it is.
How can you say that so flippantly? When Yo's getting millions of dollars.
Yeah, but we both mutually agree that there's something cool about it.
I know, but there's so much money getting thrown around for ideas. I guess it's, you know, it's just, I don't know, there's something weird going on right now. That's the one thing I've liked. The more and more I pay attention to it, the more and more I can say, there's something weird going on. Now, if it's sustainable, it's weird in a beautiful way. I just don't think it's sustainable. I guess that's how I would define a bubble. Is there a stock bubble? Maybe not. But it's just part of it is just sort of like so much of this is all based on perception and what's cool and who's heard about it and how many users do you have. And it's very much a expectation sort of game. And you know, it's just like when you go into San Francisco, you read anything about San Francisco and sort of like the growing divide between the upper class and the middle and lower classes in San Francisco and the money that's flowing into it. And, you know, and one of my favorite parts about the show Silicon Valley is the representation of the billionaires and the relationship that all these people have with the billionaires, as they're called, you know, as they call them. They use some rather randy language that I won't be using on our podcast.
Appreciate it.
It's a clean podcast, but it's pretty funny. It's interesting. It's interesting when apps like this start to make money, you know. And I wonder. I just wonder. It just seems hard to believe that, you know. Is this the sort of thing where? I don't know, James. I just don't know. It's weird. It's so weird.
So pulling it back a few feet here, there are business cycles, right? And you know about these, right? Business goes up, business goes down. We are currently on the upswing of this current business cycle.
Let's just think about it.
There was a downturn in the early 80s, and then another downturn in early 90s, and then we clearly remember the one in 2001. And then there was another one in 2009. They're not quite exactly 10 years, but they happen every 10 years. And that's just normal. And so what we're seeing is, what are we right now? We're 5 years past 2009 now?
Is that yes.
Approaching six-ish?
Yeah.
No? I don't know how to think about that. So where we are right now is we're in the middle of that hot zone. And I would not be surprised to see it continue to be strong and seemingly awesome for another, could be 3 years. It could only be two, but given what the Fed's doing, I could see it for another 3 years. And the Fed policy plays a huge role in how the economy does, because they affect interest rates, and interest rates affect lending, and lending affects investing, and investing affects growth.
That's
how it works.
I don't know who's going to be the next president, but if you're predicting 2 to 3 more years of awesomeness before it starts to turn again, I feel bad for the next one.
That's how that works, unfortunately. And so sometimes it depends on the sector that's the weakest is the one that falls first. In 2001, it was the tech industry. In 2009, it was real estate. In the 80s, what was it? It was gas, energy. I don't remember what the 90s one was, to be honest. It was just, a general slowing. So that's normal, I guess, is to say. And so we are currently in the ramp-up time period. And so, sure, it feels like a bubble, but it's just a strong market right now. This one's a little weirder than there's some underlying things that are concerning, right? Like the structural unemployment seems to be abnormally high, or the not just the unemployment number, but the partially employed number. That has remained very high, and that's kind of like that's part of the whole jobless recovery thing. And you're like, I don't know what to do about that. That's not sustainable. And that's going to cause a problem.
What's weird about it is that one, I know we keep talking about it and we keep saying it's impossible that, we keep saying that extra, if the more the machines replace productivity or increase productivity to the point where you need fewer people, that what it does is it frees the market up to go and find, get creative and do other things. But it's entirely possible that part of the reason why there's so much money in the Valley right now is because they're doing the productivity of the people that aren't getting reemployed. Possible that our productivity is just, it's our ability to outproduce what we were able to do a decade ago is outpacing itself so dramatically that you're already starting to see the early side effects of that.
Well, I'm thinking about just a couple examples. You think about this podcast. We've had some friends who they did a podcast and it was labor intensive to put it together. And now you think about it where it's like an hour after we get done, I'll have it ready to be published. Now, I'll wait until tomorrow morning, but it takes me an hour. One person, one guy, that's how automated this thing is now. And that's not just because I'm amazing, that's because technology has enabled that, and it literally did not exist even just 5 years ago to the level that we're talking about. I was thinking about you could start up a web page, a website, a full-blown, full-featured, great-looking website in half an hour.
Yeah. Well, my company is – our whole bread and butter is that we're like – there's two price ranges. There's what you buy when – we build semiconductor processing tools. We make machines that make wafers, right? And there's two price points. There's the European price point, and there's the Chinese price point. And Chinese price point, they're terrible machines. They don't work very well. They're not very reliable because they're not high quality. And the European stuff is incredibly high quality, incredibly precise, but incredibly expensive. And then there's us, the Americans, and we sit somewhere in between. And especially the Silicon Valley Americans. It's like we're a weird group because what we've managed to do is our prices sit below, well below the European prices. You know, we're above the Chinese prices, but that's because we build really high quality stuff. We build stuff that's of the same quality of what they're building in Europe. But we're still dramatically less expensive. And the question is, how do we do that? Well, the answer is we have 10 people that work in my company, and our competitors, Thermco, have 300. You know, how do we do the same level of work with so few people? Well, you know, the simple answer is we automate technology. Tremendous amounts of it. Yeah. It's unbelievable how, you know, we don't necessarily 3D print stuff, but it's, you know, I make a model in the computer. That model, I send the 3D solid to our shop. They send it to a dude who just puts it on the computer. Then a laser machine cuts it out, moves it to the – robot moves it to the next thing, bends it, and then they package it and ship it to us. I mean, it's like there's what used to take an army of engineers and drafters and machine workers and tech, you know, technicians to be able to do it is being done by two or three people. It's craziness, you know, and you know, it's not just – you know, the intelligent, it's not just the ethereal, you know, thought stuff that's being automated. It's not just spreadsheets. It's manufacturing on a scale that outside of robots doing everything. You know, we think of automation in, you know, car factories as part of the problem, but it's more fundamental, or not problem, but part of that, you know, that's what you think of when you think of automation, but it's more fundamental than that, more pervasive.
Yeah, and I would totally agree with that. And so you get this combination of the economy's strong, and so people are willing to spend money. Even further bolstering that is the opening up of crowdfunding rules, you know, enabling the way for Kickstarter and such. And so even more investment money is flowing. And you have this automation that is not only, you know, that's automating the creation of, you know, could be especially software, you know, and apps. And so what you'll find is that if you got an idea, no matter how absurd it is, the cost to make it is lower than it's ever been before, and the money's out there to make it. And so you see a bunch of this type of stuff happen. It doesn't mean that it's a bubble necessarily. It's a reality of what the marketplace is at. Now, what will happen, I guarantee it, is the cycle will go down, and we'll have another, you know, recession, whatever you want to call it, right? Down economy, and when that happens, the financial markets will tighten back up again, and you'll see less of this kind of stuff happening, and you know, and they'll suddenly all a bunch of them will dry up and disappear, and you know, that'll be that, and then they'll come back again. You see this stuff in all sorts of variations. You know, we saw it all in the Web 2.0 era. Now we're seeing it for apps. We'll see it for the Oculus. We'll see it for whatever the next thing is. And so that's what we're seeing. It's not a bubble. You know, when you look at the data and the evaluations and stuff, you go, no, not really. If anything, it's just really encouraging. You know, it's a place where a lot of creativity, ideas that you can play around with that. You can make something like Yo and say, is this worth it? Is it valuable? Can, you know, do people find value in this, and the cost to make it so low that you can actually answer that question instead of hypothesizing about it.
Oh man, cool.
That's my optimistic view of it.
I like it when you're optimistic, just kind of, sometimes it freaks me out. So
I know, that's fair. Well, you know what you could do?
What could I do?
You could lock yourself in a room and cry.
I could.
And if you wanted to do that, Nokia could help you.
The what?
The Nokia.
The Nokia.
N-O-K-E. It's N-O-K-E. Like Nike, but with an O.
Okay.
They, speaking of Kickstarter and crowdfunding, have a Kickstarter project going on where they have created a water-resistant padlock.
Nice.
That You don't need a physical key to unlock.
Nice.
Yeah, it uses Bluetooth to do it. Or if you don't have that, a clicking of the, you know, the loop piece of it. You do some, it's like a Morse code pattern. Click, 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 or something. And then that would open it up. Or yeah, you just do like a single click and it will detect your phone and unlock for you right then and there.
Nice.
Pretty darn cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah, they're doing, like I said, a Kickstarter campaign right now. Let's see where they're at. They have 23 days to go. They have a goal of $100,000, and they're currently at $335,000. So it looks like they're funded. Cool. Let's see here. You can get one for $59 right now.
Yeah.
Which is $30 off the retail price. So, you know, like most smart devices, not the cheapest of the cheap.
Tell me about it.
But pretty cool. They're, you know, they're designed for your bicycle or storage. You can give access. It's like Locktron, but for other stuff. Which my bike lock is broken. And it's horrible.
Oh, really?
So I'm like, oh, I just finally seized up and gotten old, and so I'm like, wow.
Yeah, it's funny. I always get excited about these sorts of things, and then I remember that my little, you know, $10 master lock still works fantastic, and
yeah,
I don't need to spend all that money, although I want to.
But you could. But you could.
I do want to, really bad. They're cool. Locks are cool. Locks are a fascinating little device, but I'd use it at the gym all the time. Why? Because I can.
It's a good reason. You almost need a lock for your lock.
All right.
But yeah, anyways, pretty cool little device. I liked it. If you're into locks, for some reason I am.
Yeah.
Still waiting for that Lockatron. Oh my gosh. Here, you know what? I read a post that they said Lockatron. That they've updated my shipping time, which is taking like forever and a day to do. So let's just see here. If I log in real quick, they said that they should have updated my dashboard. October! Birthday present. Birthday present. My original date was like May.
Really?
So that's working out for me.
Yeah. I got something. I think I have something that's...
I'm 2 for 2 for way beyond when it should be.
Yeah, that happens with those high-tech ones. So easy. They really, like, miss... they tend to miss those. I got two Kickstarters coming that I'm kind of excited about that should be coming pretty quick. I got one that's a golden egg maker, where basically it spins... You take an egg...
Wait, does it lay golden eggs? Is that what you're saying by a golden egg maker, or...
Sort of.
Is it a
what you take a chicken egg and you put it inside this little like container, and then you you spin it up and you like pull really fast, and what it basically does is it spins the egg inside it super quick, and it breaks the yolk and scrambles it inside the egg. So when you hard boil it, you basically are hard boiling a scrambled egg, which I'm really excited about. I've been trying to figure out.
You just peel it and eat it?
Yeah.
Like a hard boiled egg, but it's scrambled?
Yeah.
Instead of separate?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I'm excited. And then the other one that I have is this this girl made these raptor models that are like paper craft, where you cut it
like
up.
Dinosaurs, and, right?
Yeah, like the raptors. Okay. They're like a foot tall and like a foot or two, or like a foot long. I mean, they're not huge, but she actually made a huge one, like into a costume, and then made small little models.
What are these made out of? Paper mache or?
Like a stiff like cardboard stuff, and then it's paper craft, and then like you glue it together. But she's shipping out the patterns. It was like $10. I was like, I can have a raptor on my desk for $10. Yes, please. I'll take one. I got suckered in. Oh man, it's so easy to spend so much money on Kickstarter. It's ridiculous. Anyways, speaking of things that aren't on Kickstarter anymore, so you got excited a couple weeks ago about Thalmic. They're the dudes that build the Myo armband, which is basically like it's a armband reader for your arm.
Yeah. It does
motion tracking and hand articulation stuff.
I'll be honest, I was like, I don't remember them at all. But now that you've said it, I totally do.
Yeah, now you do.
Myo, had you said that, I would have been like, oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, I just like the name Thalmic. I think it's a cool company name. So basically what they're trying to do is one of the things we talked about last time is what the heck do you do with it? You know, how do you find a market?
Video games.
Video games is the obvious choice in our opinion. But they think they got some...
They're based in Waterloo? Oh, bummer.
I know, right? Well, you know, there's going to be a lot of high-tech people to be hired.
That's true. That's true. So now they're stabilized.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They're already hiring. Yeah, so the big question is, you know, what can you do with it? And Thalmic is doing a big push into enterprise. Is their big deal? They want to get which I think is interesting. And basically, what they're trying to do is get into, and it's kind of clever. They're basically saying we think our device will work really well for jobs that require. It's, you know, it'd be nice to use your hands, but for whatever reason, you can't touch whatever you want to interface with. You can't use a mouse. You can't use touch screens. And the classic example of this sort of thing is in surgery rooms, right? You know, there's been a lot of talk about being able to use things like Kinect or Leapfrog inside of a surgery room in order to interact with a computer that you don't have to touch. But Thalmic thinks their Myo is perfect for this. So the surgeon, while they're getting ready and doing the thing where they wash their hands all the way up to their like elbows, they would slip on the Thalmic and then they'd get all like geared up and everything. So they just have it underneath them and then they could be doing their surgery and then turn around and be interacting with the computer in midair if they need to.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. They also are working with Google Glass. The goal is to get Google Glass to be all integrated and stuff. So, you know, the long-term goal on this is basically to get to the point where you can have your computer rocking. You can be in the field anywhere and just start interacting with your computer in a way that doesn't require just, you know, voice stuff. And so the idea here, the example here would be, you know, you're building a building, you're out in the field, you're walking along, and you want to see, well, okay, where does this wall need to go or something like that, and then you can use yours to interact with it, your Myo. So, I don't know, it's one of those things where it's cool, you know? They're trying to move into that, the wearable, you know, market, and they're, you know, and I think they got a pretty good chance just based on, you know, the fact that they seem to be the biggest player in this market, if sort of the only, for no other reason. But, you know, if they can get some, you know, there's a big question. It's, well, you know, why did the iPhone take off? You know, it's always a big question. I think, you know, they did a lot of things, but one of the part of it was they had the touchscreen, and part of the important part of the touchscreen was figuring out how to get the touch screen keyboard to work. You got this new interface type that in order to get it to work, you got to, you know, come up with a new, you got to do it at a quality that people can use. And I think if Myo can do that, where they can get an interface quality better than what other people have gotten, yeah, why wouldn't they have success there? So let's go.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's pretty cool. I like it.
So, do you want
me? I don't know. I guess keep going. You got a lot more than me, so keep going.
it's always like that. So another, in other news, the Clippers got a new owner.
I watched that video. Ballmer was pumped.
Ballmer is crazy. But this week we got to see him getting pumped up about the Clippers. But he's like fully disengaging from Microsoft. He as of this week, he has stepped down from the board, and Microsoft. The Ballmer era is over. Obviously, he's still a pretty, you know, big shareholder. So he's, you know, I'm sure he'll have some sort of a say in the direction of the company, but you know, far less. His voice is becoming smaller and smaller as the days progress, and he's turning into a full-blown sports team dude. That's what he's going to be doing. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Send him an era.
Yeah.
Long overdue, but you know.
I think so. I think so. It's weird. It's weird because it's just like, you know, what happened to Microsoft? Why are they slipping so hard? And you know, I think it's way too short sighted to say it's one dude's fault. But at the same time, you know, the buck's got to stop somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, you look at what's going on with the Xbox right now, and that was all under his, you know, jurisdiction, his oversight. And, you know, the Xbox had the clear majority, you know, expectation as the next generation system. And that somehow got fumbled terribly. And, you know, they're getting ready to, you know, get rid of Windows 8 as fast as possible. And Nokia's, you know, shrinking their market share right now. Or Nokia, you know, it's just a lot of wrong directions this last year, and how much of that is Steve Ballmer's fault? I don't know, but
all of it.
All of it directly.
Stop somewhere, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
All right, go Clippers, I guess.
All right. So, you next. Or do I keep going?
I only have three more, so you got to keep going.
Okay. So a couple months ago, we talked about the Nook and, you know, BlackBerry. Wow, that was a Freudian slip. Barnes & Noble's was doing their thing where they basically fired all their engineers, and they were like, no, we're not changing anything with the Nook. No, Nook's fine. Don't worry about it. Guys, how can you continue to have this product without an engineering team? Well, the answer came along a couple months ago during that interim between then and now, and they've teamed up with Samsung to build a Nook device. So they're leveraging the Nook platform, and Samsung is going to build the tablet basically, and this is going to compete more directly with your Amazon Fire tablets. You know, so it's a 7-inch tablet called the Samsung Galaxy Tab 4 Nook. It's a more fully featured device. Wow. So it'll have a full Android with, you know, or full Samsung flavor of Android. It'll be able to run Android apps. Retails for $179 after a $20 rebate. This is the same price available online at Amazon and other retailers. So basically, yeah, that's, you know, this is their big response. Amazon's running away with the e-reader market. Yeah.
That is an awesome picture of that guy holding it up.
Right, right. Just a face.
He seems worried. It's like, did we do the right thing?
Yeah, the answer is no to that question, by the way.
Should we have released this?
Probably not.
What is this thing I'm holding in my hand? It's one of 147 we released this year. I can't remember it anymore.
Right? Jeez. I don't know. This is such an interesting... I guess it's like, if you're not just going to give up and cede the market to Amazon, what are you supposed to do? I guess this isn't the worst thing you can do, but jeez Louise. I mean, it's like... You know, I'm kind of a, you know, I'm a big fan, and I've, you know, a lot of my decisions that I make are based on the, what's the most portable thing for me to do? What's going to be the easiest for me to get along with? Why did I buy the PlayStation? Because I think it's going to be the system that has the biggest user base, which means the biggest titles are going to go there. So the most opportunities. Why did I buy my Kindle? Because I can have a Kindle app on every single device. And, you know, I buy the book once and it's good everywhere. It's the reason why I don't buy, you know, iBook stores, because I want my books 10 years from now. And if I decide to change ecosystems in 10 years, I want my, you know, intellectual property to go with me. And I think it's, you know, the problem here is it's like, I guess you've got the user base of Nook users that are sort of in that dilemma, right, where they're asking the question, you know, what are we going to do now as we move forward?
But now five of them.
Yeah, right. That's, you know, and their whole dilemma is nobody bought our platform. So, you know, what are you supposed to do? I think what they really need to do is, you know, if they're gonna compete with Amazon, and that is a mess, is at the very least you got to have an app on every single device. You got to have an iPhone app. You got to have an Android app. You got to have a, you know, desktop versions of it, not just hardware. And then you got to compete on price, you know, and which once again is hard to do with Amazon. I realize it's a rather tall order. But, you know, you just look at what they're doing here, and it's like, why would anybody go out and buy this? What have they done? What's compelling about this at all? I don't know. It's just, it's weird, right? It's weird.
Like, and, I'd agree.
And Samsung, you know.
But it is the first ever full-featured Android tablet designed for reading.
Yeah, okay.
It's got that.
Yeah. So it's got that going for it, right? I don't know. I guess Samsung's, you know, argument and all its position and all of this is always what Samsung does, right? Which is, like you said, this is our 173rd tablet we've released this year, and they're just seeing what sticks. Try a bunch and see what people buy, and don't worry about it, you know.
Yeah.
And to them, this is they don't care if this sinks or swims, but this is the future of Barnes and Nobles, and they seem to be. I guess my attitude is, I know Samsung. I'm sure they know Samsung. How did this come across as a good idea? Like, you know, what's the long-term strategy here? It doesn't seem to be one at all.
I would agree. I don't have a good answer.
Bummer. The Amazon showrooms are going away. It's inevitable.
It's true. I haven't been into one in forever.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I used to go in. I mean, as recently as like 3 years ago, I would go in once a week just to tool around. But the ones that are, you know, and check out books and stuff. But the ones that are and shop for Amazon. And the ones that, you know, are closest to me are closed down. And, you know, it's. I just don't go into bookstores anymore. Yeah.
And for me, the smartest thing that Amazon ever did was allow you to download previews.
Yeah.
I mean, because, like, even if I'm going to get the audiobook, now I'll be like, well, I'll download a sample, and I'll read that first chapter, and I'll decide if I want to get the audiobook based on that.
Yeah.
And then I'll get the audiobook, and I'll re-listen to that section and keep going on. And that's fantastic, because that used to be part of my, like, I don't know if I want this book or not, and now it answers my question very well.
Yeah.
For free and fast. I don't have to go anywhere. So, I've got, I don't know how many I have. Probably 25, 30 samples sitting on my phone just because, like, I might be interested in this.
I wish Barnes & Noble's, too, would do something where, I mean, it's so funny because you sit there and you go, I still think there's value of them being a brick-and-mortar showroom, and I think they could make that work. But it's like they got to make the friction's just going to be less. And maybe what the best thing to do is to pilot like coffee shop size bookstores, you know, where you've got one copy of 1,000 books, you know, and you just have a bunch of shelves with a bunch of single books, and it all is built around a small coffee shop, and you can download things right there to your Barnes & Noble app. You know, but I think the reality of it is, if you really wanted to do that strategy, what you would do is you'd hook up with Amazon and you'd sell coffee, you know,
too bad they can't do something like a gym membership, you know, where you pay a monthly fee to go in, and it's almost, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like everybody feels the same about bookstores. It's a bummer they're going away, but they're anachronistic at this point. It's like, what's the advantage? They're too big. They've got too much inventory. They're not quote unquote lean, and you know, so it's, you know, they've got this huge dilemma of how the market is changing. And I feel like you need a major overhaul of it. And Barnes & Noble's, what's rough about it is I feel like Barnes & Noble's is is primed because they've got the name to go with that, but you know, but they'd have to get courageous and try something different, and they don't seem to want to. They're choosing to die slowly.
Yeah. But. One company that's choosing not to die slowly is Twitter.
Yes.
And they're doing that by constantly morphing and changing things about their program. For example, your timeline is not just of people you follow anymore.
Interesting.
Yeah. They're setting it up now where they will identify a tweet, an account to follow, or other content that's popular or relevant to you, and then they may add it to your timeline.
Hmm.
So this means you'll sometimes see tweets from accounts you don't follow. They said they select each tweet using a variety of signals, including how popular it is and how people in your network are interacting with it. Our goal is to make your home timeline even more relevant and interesting. So, for example, if a friend of yours favorites a tweet, and a lot of other people have also favorited it, it may show up to you on your timeline.
Hmm. Interesting. I think
it's like the opposite of a Facebook news feed. Facebook's like, we're going to take stuff away and just show you the stuff that you really care about. And they're like, we think you might like this, and so we're going to include it in your regular stream.
Yeah, which I kind of appreciate. I kind of appreciate, because on one hand, we've talked about the idea of the flood, you know, the fire hose. Sometimes it's way too much stuff. Yet at the same time, you know, I almost appreciate the idea of, you know, there are people who I only want every 10th tweet of theirs, because those are the only ones that are worth anything. And if Twitter's going to figure that out on my behalf, cool. Thanks, Twitter. You know, and, you know, especially as like a news generator, you know, because, you know, the big comment, the big thing that Twitter has going for it, as everybody always talks about right now, is that it's where news breaks. It's the, you know, it's the first place people go to post new news. And if, you know, there's a whole big thing, you know, going on and you're not paying attention to it because you don't follow the people that are breaking the news, well, you know, you got to wait till NBC manages to get around to talking about it before you'll know. That could take like 5 or 6 minutes. So this way, you'll know it that much faster, because as soon as it, you know, as soon as anything starts to really pop, it'll end up in Twitter, you know, even if you're not following it. Like, it's a good idea. I definitely, you know, it's one of those things that it's like, especially for breaking news, it's the sort of thing that I think, you know, if I remember that Twitter is where the news is, you know, the big stuff is breaking, even if I'm not directly following that person, then that is where I'll, you know, click to first, which is what they, you know, I think that's one of their biggest strengths at this point.
I agree.
Good.
That's all I got.
That's it. It's awesome. Yeah. Well.
They're morphing. They're changing. It'll be good.
Yeah. I agree.
I like what they're doing.
So. Speaking of things that have been tweeted in the last week, the rumor mills are churning, and. As Microsoft realizes they might have not hit the mark with Windows 8, possibly, they too are shifting strategy. And as of now, the rumor mills are saying September 30th, Microsoft will unveil Windows 9.
That's coming up.
Yeah.
That's like a month from now.
Yeah. 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 So they're.
This is going to be a crazy, crazy holiday season.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it'll be really interesting to see if this is the. When the launch for this is. Because, you know, this is going to be the public reveal, probably, if nothing else.
And they don't actually launch it on the 30th.
Yeah, my guess is that it is just not ready. And they realize that people aren't going to be buying. I think what this is an admission that nobody's trying to buy a Windows 8 computer at this point. You know, if you absolutely have to buy a computer, then you'll buy a Windows 8 computer because you absolutely have to. But if you're actually excited about a new computer, you're going for a different operating system, whether it's the Chromebook or Macintosh, you know, OS X, especially with the latest version of OS X coming out and the new iPhone coming out. I think what they're going to be trying to do, really and truly, is going to be trying to slow people down from, you know, jumping ship. They want the, you know, what they're trying to do now is they're going to be setting the stage for, hey, this is what we have to come for Windows. So if you are, you know, if you're thinking about buying a computer, stop thinking about buying a Mac and, you know, just give us a couple more months. We're working on something cool. It sounds like they're going to be keeping a lot of the stylings of your sort of modern Windows Metro tile things. At the same time, it's going to be functionally much closer to Windows 7, which is sort of what everybody wanted all along. Kind of frustrating that it's taking this long for them to do it, but it's basically, you know, it from a UI perspective, it's Windows 7 that looks like Windows 8, is what people are with the rumor mill is, and like Windows 7 compared to Vista, where Windows 7 was underneath the hood, underneath the UI, was basically Vista. Kind of cleaned up, tightened all the bolts, hardware was running the way it was supposed to, but more or less, it was still Vista, and they put a new UI on it, and everybody loved it. And I, you know, it sounds like that. I'm willing to bet that when, you know, people start tearing apart and get the reviews, that's what you're going to find. It's basically Windows 8 underneath, which is, you know, a strong, stable operating system. It's, you know, it's legitimately all right. You know, most of their problems have been UI-based stuff, and they're going to go back to a more traditional Windows UI, which people will be thrilled about, and they'll, you know, they'll get a lot of attention because it's the best Windows operating system that's ever come out. Yet it'll still look similar to what you might be getting on, you know, your Windows phone. And so, you know, like what Apple is doing with, you know, like Yosemite, it's their, you know, their new operating system. It's sort of a unification of the style of the UI, of the design language, which is the big thing right now in the tech industry. All three of your big operating system companies, Google, Microsoft, and Apple, are that's what they're doing. They want a unification of their design language. So I don't know. I'm excited to see what Microsoft does. I've a long time said I think they're capable engineers. They just make stupid decisions sometimes, trying to chase something that doesn't make any sense. And hopefully, you know, hopefully they're getting back to the basics and they'll find some success.
Yeah. They will. I think so. Bomber's out, as we've already noted, so it's good.
Yeah.
Good. I think so. By the way, I was corrected in the comments. Thank you, TC Johnson. 90s was the tech stock bubble. 2001 was something different.
That's Wow. That, yeah.
I don't remember what 2001 was, but I remember it went down. It was related to an airplane crash.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was about to make a really, really bad joke about things going down, but I held my tongue just long enough for you to remember, so I appreciate you not making me go there.
No problem, man. No problem.
I still think we're in the too soon ballpark of those types of jokes, especially with the whole ISIL thing going on in Iraq right now. It's just... touchy. Anyway.
So Apple's solving one of our biggest problems or something?
Yeah. So, okay. So I kind of suspected that I would be a huge fan of this show, Silicon Valley, as soon as I started watching it. And I am. I'm a huge fan. I'm never getting HBO, but I wish I could because I'd like to be able to watch it as it comes out as opposed to talking about it months later. Or, you know, yeah. So, What was I talking about? So one of the funny parts about the show is there's a scene where there's this dude who's got this great startup idea about an app that would allow you to find your car. And you basically would be like, you'd pull this app out, and it would lock into your location. And then, and if for some reason it couldn't get your location based on what was around there, then it would have an area where you could type in like where you had parked on your app, and then you'd leave. And then the main character asks, why wouldn't you just use your note app if you're just writing it down? And he goes, because it'd be a car app. It'd be help you find your car. And I think it's one of those really funny ones of a lot of times – I think what's interesting about it is I feel like everybody has lost their car in a giant parking lot before and had that same thought. There should be an app for that. You know, how do you build an app that allows you to accurately try to locate where you left your car or, you know, wherever, basically sort of your micro region stuff your car. What's up?
I got paid for an app idea.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Does that make me a professional app developer?
Oh, yeah. Now? Heck yeah, man.
Yeah, it does. So I was talking with a guy from work about a way of printing from your mobile device to a printer, because that's the company I work for.
Yeah.
But anyways, we had an interesting way of doing it. And so we did a little write-up and a little ditty for it. And it was just like kind of like you were talking about, where it's like, dude, the print button already exists.
Right.
But you know, this was different, kind of. Ultimately, it got rejected for a patent. They were like, no, sorry, doesn't count. But HP likes to reward thought leadership. Yeah. So they were like, here's $100 for the contribution.
Oh, baby.
Keep the thoughts flowing. To which I started to do the math and went, I should fill out 10 of these a week.
Right?
I mean, why not? Now, granted, it was like a couple month lag, but I'm like, dude, I could start cranking out ideas. Spend $100 on, you know, that first $100, like I should go out to lunch with someone or a late afternoon, and we should just whiteboard this stuff out and just whatever permutation and ideas we come up with, start getting after it. We might even get lucky and one of them sticks.
I was going to say, worst case scenario is that none of them work. Best case scenario is you get stupid lucky with a dumb idea about an app that just says, yo, you know?
So, I mean, I've, as we know on this podcast, David Perry, he is the lucky patent holder on, I love this idea, of taking a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And maybe not that, but like a photo-sized piece of paper.
Yeah.
And then tearing off the edge here and folding it to create a built-in kickstand so your paper stays up.
Nice.
He's got a patent for that.
Brilliant.
That's what I was like, all right. That's cool. And
I'll know who to make the check out to every time I do that.
Yeah, I know, which is pretty funny. But all that to say, like, you know, so he's got one but HP and other companies too that love the reward for that kind of stuff. But I was like, dude, seriously, like 10 ideas. I'll just do 10 ideas a month, you know? That's not a bad raise. And that could be totally worth it.
Our dad has gotten checks like that from GM when he worked there in his youth, you know, for that exact sort of process improvement things. And he actually knew guys that had that made crazy money sometimes because they were truly novel ideas that had a real effect on the bottom line. And GM rewarded that. I mean, that's a big deal, man. That can make you some serious cash. Company like that, you don't have to come up with a very big idea for it to have some actual, you know, have some actual legs in a company that size.
Yeah, but anyways, I'm a professional developer now because I got paid for an idea.
That's awesome. We're gonna have to put that on our list of of credentials.
Yeah.
So basically, back to what we were talking about with solving the age-old question of where's my car, Apple has patented, speaking of patents, a way to do that. So it integrates with CarPlay because it knows where your car is. So you'll park your car, and it'll send a message to your car and your GPS, and it'll all sort of sync and say, okay, remember where I am. But then it goes one step further than that because you don't always have GPS available, and GPS isn't always super precise. So it actually uses a host of different technologies that sort of track your motion. So you're keeping track of what direction you're going, where you've been, sort of your overall stuff. And I guess these are things that are actually already built into the iPhone. It's stuff that it's capable of doing with quite a bit of effect. And they basically are like, and you've got these like basically these Bluetooth iBeacon things built into your car, and they, you know, you just got this host of different technologies that are all working together. And effectively, what happens, what they're talking about, is the idea that you'll have CarPlay in your car, you'll park, you'll leave, you'll go do whatever you need to do, and then you'll open up the app, and it will have been tracking you the whole time. It knows the GPS location of where you were, and you'll say, where's my car? And it will map you how to get back to your car. And I love this because it's funny. It's like sometimes, you know, you talk about, you know, how do you come up with an app idea? It's you solve a problem, right? I have a problem, and it's a problem that everybody has. Where's my car? How do I solve that problem? Well, you come up with these simple solutions, right, where you tag your car as you're leaving it. But anybody who's ever actually tried to do that, even myself, like writing down, like you realize that like tagging your GPS location or just writing it down in the Notes app, why would I need an extra app for this? And I think the brilliance of this, and it's the sort of thing that really excites me, is it's that it is the sort of fully integrated thing that Apple brings to the table that pushes companies like Google and forces their hand to figure out how to do it within their ecosystem too. But it's automated. It just does it for you. It remembers where your car is. And so at the point at which you realize you don't remember where your car is, which is, you know, generally you almost never, if you actually take the time to write down where your car is, you're going to remember where your car was. It's always when you were leaving in a hurry, when you wouldn't have busted out the app to mark your car's location in the first place, that you don't remember where your car is, you know? It's that once every, you know, 400 days that happens. And you know, boom, Apple's going to be there to save you because it does it every time. And it doesn't just use GPS. It doesn't have the same limitations as whatever of everybody else. And I don't know. It's just, it's cool. It's the sort of thing that really excites me. I love it. Makes me want to get CarPlay. Upgrade my stereo again.
So apparently, if you have version 3.4 of the Google Search app,
yeah,
there's a vertical ellipsis menu button. You tap Help and Feedback, then you look for a string of numbers at the top, and you'll see your version number. Okay, fine. Then you can go to your Google Now cards, and if Google thinks that you're driving, and you can do that by giving magic words, I guess, you can make sure that like how you usually get around is selected the driving. What you can do is after you park the car, that card should pop up in the Google Now card stack with a map showing your rough location. And when the card appears, you can tap it to expand the map. If you've made more than one stop on the same trip, an option to see previous locations, sprinkles from breadcrumbs. But all that to say, it will remember your parking spot and tell you how to get back to it.
That's cool.
Sounds very similar, except that it uses your phone, not integrated with CarPlay.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, I guess that's the, you know, that's probably why it's important that they mention CarPlay in the patent. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's just cool. It's cool when you get to the point where you realize that, you know, this is when the real auto, and we talk about automated versus automagic, and this is the real automagic stuff where it really is just all in the background and it's completely invisible until you need it. And then it's just, you know, it's just there. It's awesome. It's cool. I'm excited about it, James.
I can tell.
But
that's cool.
Yeah. Ooh.
So,
all right.
I think you're up.
I think I am too. All right. So, there is a study by ComScore done looking at the top 10 apps used by different age bands. Okay.
Okay.
So the number one app used by 18 to 24 year olds is
Snapchat.
Nope. But that is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
All right, that's actually lower than I would have expected. But okay, Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook's number one.
Yeah, I guess if Snapchat was number one in that demo, it'd be a bit bigger deal.
Yeah, Kick is pretty popular with the kids.
What is Kick? How do I not know what Kick is?
It's a messaging app. Allows images and links.
Interesting. I'm going to check that out.
And then iFunny, smiley face. It lets users add funny captions to images.
That should be illegal. Macros is what they call those.
Well, it's called iFunny. iFunny. And apparently it's a huge hit. And this author was like, yeah, I hadn't heard of either of those two apps.
Interesting.
Awesome. Very cool. Now, how about this one? The 25 to 34 year olds.
Ooh.
It's you and me. We're in the same age group now.
Oh my gosh. Technically, we've been in this age group together for a while, but I feel like Yo is going to pass everything else relatively quickly. For me, my most frequently used app, this probably doesn't count, but is reddit.com/compact. Nope. I think as far as apps go, probably is Facebook, maybe Hinge. But, you know, Instagram, I use Instagram a lot.
Facebook's number one. Okay. Double anything else.
All right. Now, this is fascinating. Okay, no, it's not. Never mind. Yeah, go continue.
So, Skype actually sneaks into the picture for our age group. Yeah, pretty interesting. And then there's the 35 to 54 year olds.
Yeah.
We're going double decades now.
Oh, yeah.
These are the Gen Xers. Their number one app?
Facebook.
Yep. Over four times more than any other one.
Yeah. I can tell why that company's worth a lot of money, you know?
Yeah. They use quite a bit here. They like Candy Crush.
They do. Holy cow. Candy Crush is still on the up and up there.
Apparently. They also like Starbucks and CVS gift cards.
Yeah.
Which is fine. How about the ages 55 and plus?
Okay. Plus, so this is the rest of them.
Yeah.
Huh.
Number one?
Lay it on me.
I'll give you one guess.
Facebook.
Four times. Then the next one.
Man.
Which, by the way, is Facebook Messenger.
I was going to say, right? So, in each demo, Facebook, Instagram, and Facebook Messenger. Facebook, Instagram, Facebook Messenger, Facebook, Instagram, Facebook Messenger, Facebook, Facebook Messenger, and it's not until you get to the 55 pluses that Instagram doesn't get on the list. Man, they're doing good. Holy cow. I mean, geez Louise.
So what's interesting about this is 55 plus, they like Words with Friends. They are still playing that one.
Yeah.
Apparently. And Solitaire.
Oh, man. Which Solitaire? Does it
just the mobility wear one.
Which one's that one?
I don't know. It's the only one you play, man. That's the one I have.
I think I actually do a different one.
So my story is I was on an airplane, and there was a lady sitting next to me who had an iPad. And this was like, you know, early on. They had just come out type thing. And it was like still amazing to see them, you know?
Yeah.
And she had downloaded Solitaire app and was playing it on her iPad, And that's where I was like, oh, I want one. That looks like so much fun to be playing solitaire on an iPad. It was cool. So I downloaded it, and I'll still play it on occasion because it's a good, you know, it's mindless.
Yeah.
Easy to use. Now, what's interesting about all of this, like you said, everyone uses Facebook. Also interesting is that there are only a few big companies, Facebook, Google, Apple, Yahoo, Amazon, and eBay, that account for 9 of the 10 most used apps.
How many was it that you said?
Facebook, Google, Apple, Yahoo, Amazon, eBay, 6.
It's nuts, man.
And they account for 16 of the top 25 and 24 of the top 50. So all that to say, there's a few companies that control most of the popular apps. And then the other interesting one is the outlier.
Yeah.
It's Pandora.
Yeah.
It's number 2 or 3 on every single list.
Yeah.
That was a surprise to me. I mean, I'll admit, I use it on my phone a lot. I don't use it much on my computer. But
You know what's funny? I don't use it at all. I do not use...
What, are you Spotify now, or are you all iTunes everything?
I'm
that deluxe version now that you pay monthly for.
Yeah, iTunes Radio, yearly. iTunes Radio, it's actually, I think that's one of the reasons why I'm like, it's so easy for me, is because it's yearly. It's, well, trust me, once a year, it's not bad.
PSN, they'll get you.
Yeah. Yeah, so iTunes Radio is my big one, and I am daily tempted on paying for Pandora. But yeah, I have actually officially removed my Hue smart light bulb apps, replaced Pandora on my first page of apps.
Whoa!
Yeah. I mean, that's how little I use Pandora. I don't even know where it is. I think I still have it downloaded. I don't think I deleted it. Yeah, I didn't delete it. It's still there.
Wow!
I don't know where I put it on my phone. It's in some folder.
Search for it, it will tell you the folder that it's in.
Yeah.
But you don't want to ruin that fun, I can tell.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, so just some interesting stats, which I love. Maybe not totally surprising, but definitely the Pandora one was kind of a surprise.
Yeah, that is a surprise to me. I mean,
pleasant surprise.
And speaking of which, surprise. They're pretty much the kings of hiring chicks in the Silicon Valley. Which, you know,
good job, guys.
I realized that this is an unexciting topic for you last week, so it's probably not anything exciting this week, but just for the record, on follow-up, you know? But, yeah.
Thank you for the follow-up.
You're welcome. My pleasure. yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. BT Dubs, I'm signing up for Kick right now because I don't want to be old like you.
That's fair. You have to tell me what it's about. Well, it's funny. We were talking about being able to just send smiley faces.
Yeah.
As an app idea.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Instead of yo's, just send smiley faces.
Yeah. That'd be fun. Sounds like that's maybe what they do, plus links, or I don't know. You have to tell me. Maybe I'll have to sign up for that. Of course, I just signed up for yo, so, you know, baby steps.
Baby steps. Welcome to Kick, the super fast smartphone messenger. If you have any questions, let me know. I'll do my best.
Okay, that's good to know.
I know, I'm excited. Okay, do you want me to go or do you want to go? It's up to you.
You go, I'll go, you go.
All right, sounds perfect.
Then we'll be done.
Yeah, so, you know, bide your time, everybody. We're nearly there. SpaceX... performed a rapid mid-air disassembly of one of their rockets earlier this week.
Is that a big deal?
Yeah, they blew it up.
Oh.
technically, it blew itself up, and it did so on purpose, which is good news. But it was a bit of a shocker when it happened. People weren't, you know, I generally don't like to blow up rockets. It's just not what people are trying to do. It was one of the SpaceX Falcon 9R rockets exploded shortly after launch during a test flight in Tejas, the company said Friday. So basically, you know, long and short of it,
dude, Elon Musk's tweet is awesome.
Yeah. Three-engine F9R Dev-1 vehicle auto-terminated during the test flight. No injuries or near injuries. Rockets are tricky.
Rockets are tricky.
Yeah. It's, you know, I mean, it's literally rocket science.
It's pretty funny.
Which, you know, yeah. Yeah, you know. It's, gosh, that is a great understatement of the century sort of thing, you know? Did you ever see that video of the dude who goes to a party and he's asking what other people do, and he's a brain surgeon? And they're like, oh, I work in accounting. And the guy goes, oh, you work in accounting? Oh, wow, it's not exactly brain surgery. It's just like... It's a great video. I'll just send it to you.
That's hilarious.
But So basically what happens is, you know, these rockets are designed to, if anything goes wrong, you don't want them killing anybody. That's the big thing to avoid. Sometimes that requires you to safely terminate the flight, as opposed to letting it just sort of go do its own thing. And something happened while the rocket was being launched. Everything was good during the takeoff. Everything was good during the first couple seconds of the flight. But at some point, things started to go sideways in a rather literal sense. And instead of endangering anybody, it took itself out and blew up mid-flight. And there's actually this really cool photo of it exploding. So up high up in the air. So, yeah, our family members who work for Lockheed Martin were rather excited to hear about this recent development, because it's the most scary company in the world for them. It's just SpaceX.
Yeah, but
so they follow that sort of stuff closely, but yeah, I
Does that stress your relationship, knowing that you love Elon Musk?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay, good.
My boy's going to win in the long run. It's just a matter of time. You know?
I think there's room for multiple winners. That's what I tell myself in the printing division.
Yes. There is, you know. Microsoft's telling them the same thing in the Xbox department. There's room for more than one of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I had one of the hardest weeks for work this last week because HP came out with this quarterly earnings, and printing division was not the hottest ever.
Ooh.
And so we had to explain and explain and explain and explain what was going on. And in my current role, I get help with all of that. And it was crazy fast-paced. I think I was doing math, because that's what I do. And I had like 18 hours on Monday and... 15 on Tuesday. Wednesday was a light day with only 10. And then I think I was back up to, it was like 12 or 14 on Thursday.
That's a long week, James. I'm looking at you yawning on the show for those of us who are just listening. He's doing a good job of keeping it relatively quiet, but that explains it. I get the tiredness.
Yeah, it was nuts. So I haven't worked again today, some. But yeah, just crazy. And so that's what I keep telling myself. No, it's okay. It's not a total crater. So there's been another thing going on around the internets.
Yes.
I'm sure that you've seen a couple of the videos.
Yes.
For ALS, the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar?
AKA Lou Gehrig's disease stuff. Correct. It does sound familiar.
That's the one. Some, I think it was a baseball player, doused himself, challenged other people on his team. They doused themselves, challenged other people. Soon it got outside of that little circle. And
the premise being, you have 24 hours to douse yourself with an ice bucket, or you have to donate to ALS.
Yeah, it's... I guess apparently that's how
that
works.
That's the premise, but what it ends up being is people just dump themselves with ice water, challenge people, and then donate anyways, ideally, as opposed
yeah.
to, you know.
Exactly. So it's kind of turned into a thing.
Yeah, you could call it a thing.
There's some people like my wife that are completely annoyed by the entirety of it.
Oh, man. You know, I'm this is the sort of thing that I normally would be rather cynical about, but it's a good cause, and they've raised like $41 million already, like, during this campaign. So, I don't know. I feel kind of like, you know.
Well, the issue was there were a lot who weren't doing it and were just doing it for notoriety. And what I was going to talk about is there was a fun article on Dig, actually.
Oh, wow.
That gave an open letter of, "Dear Brands, here are some do's and don'ts for your Ice Bucket Challenge videos."
Oh, yeah?
So, for example, don't do your Ice Bucket Challenge in front of your huge logo. It's like, here's looking at you, Best Buy, Volvo, Starbucks. Come on. He's like, there's that. And then he's like, "Likewise, please do not use a legitimate charity to make a public spectacle out of your brand's generosity or strong-arm your employees into doing it the way TD and Chase Banks did."
Oh, man.
And so that's one where apparently the TD CEO got challenged three times. So he's like, "All right, we're doing it three times right now." And so he does it once. And then he challenges two of his coworkers, and like the camera follows him, and there's another bucket set up. And so he does it along with them. And he's like, "All right, we got one more." And then he goes behind an entire crowd of employees who all have buckets in front of them. And they all do it. And I'm like, on one hand, I'm like, "It's a cool video, I guess. I don't, you know, didn't say anything too wrong with it." And then they were like, "Definitely do not have your corporate mascot dump the water for you," which is exactly what Coca-Cola did.
Jeez.
Pretty funny. Same with Target. They were like that. He goes, "But at least the magnates in the videos above bothered to show up," the CEOs, the people in charge. Like, unlike McDonald's CEO, who simply let Ronald get wet on his behalf. We're not exactly loving it. And you're like, "Nice, nice." And he goes, "However, you'll appreciate this. At least they're not Samsung."
Oh, yeah.
Who decided to show their phone getting dunked to show off its water-resistant nature and calling out other phones for not being water-resistant.
Oh, Samsung.
you're like, "Had to be Samsung." Oh yeah.
You know, that's one of those ones that's so perfect, I'm almost would be disappointed if that hadn't happened. That is so tasteless. I mean, like, and I'm really, I'm actually trying very hard to, like I said, it's so easy to be cynical about this, but it's doing what it's supposed to do. I'm even willing to let McDonald's slide. You know, at least somebody got dunked in the nature of it, and hopefully people at the company actually donated money. That'd be cool. But Samsung. Jeez Louise. Oh my gosh.
And then they're like, and then there's this one, which is a blatant cash-in attempt by KFC. Again, featuring a mascot instead of Yum Brands CEO David Novak, who promises to donate $100 for people who participate in the challenge while using a KFC bucket to do so. Up to $10,000.
Oh.
They're just like, "Nice. Excellent." And so then the one brand, maybe two, that they call out and they say, "Who does it right?" And they went, "Well, Richard Branson of Virgin Group did."
Which he is his own logo, so.
Yes. I know. He was like, he didn't have to. Which I thought was funny, but you know, there's like, didn't make a big deal about it. And he goes, "Or you just go the Chili's route and get weird about it," which is they literally had a chili that they dumped ice water on. I as like an animated GIF. It just goes over and over.
Yeah, it's a Vine video. That's awesome. Yeah, you know. Gosh,
it's funny.
Yeah, you know, it's you know what it is. We're clearly moved into the phase of like it's this weird mix of like I think this we've got the horse on the ground. We have got the bats going as hard as we can. We're beating this horse. We're just beating this dead horse. I mean, it is dead, and we're kicking and swinging like crazy. But the altruism of the internet going, you know, audience is such that we're willing to put up with an awful lot of stupidness for a decent cause. You know, Harlem Shake, that lasted about 3 days longer than it should have, and it lasted for 7 days.
I think that they should figure out how to combine the two, to be honest.
Harlem Shake for ALS, that'd be awesome. But
ice water somehow involved. It could work.
I like it. Actually, James.
No.
Dude, we could put our logo on it. I'm down. I'm up for it. No. You'd have to do a screen capture of from like where you're like doing the thing, like all in the small, and I'm just standing there like, you know, whatever, just listening, you know, just not really paying attention, and then we would drop and we'd just both go nuts and have it and we'd have to have the music like bouncing back and forth so it would just pop up and like switch between the screens. It'd be great. I think there's potential here, and then somehow we'd dump ourselves with ice water.
We'll talk about it.
Okay. But so I don't know. It's an interesting world we live in. You know,
I love the internet. You gotta take the good with the bad.
It's true. Yeah, you do. Whatever. Did you donate?
No.
I mean neither.
I already contribute to my own places of choosing.
Yeah, me too. But
okay, man.
Speaking of avoiding ice water,
nice. That was a good one.
Thank you. That's something that you want your Google cars to do, but there turns out that there's a few secrets that Google's been keeping from us. Those lying dogs.
I'm kind of disappointed that Quartz didn't incorporate the word self. Into, you know, it says like these are the secrets Google wanted to keep about its self-driving cars. And it's a shame that they didn't say these are the secrets Google wanted to keep to itself about self-driving cars.
Yeah. Or maybe the wording would have been too confusing if they had said these were the secrets that Google wanted to keep to itself driving car, you know, some sort of a. But
I just feel like they could have done better there. That's all I'm saying.
But, you know, whatever. It's clickbait.
No, not whatever. They could have done better.
This is so dumb. This is, it's funny. It's, the article title is clearly designed to be prejudicial. It's supposed to elicit some sort of a... They're hiding. They're keeping something secrets from us. And then you read through what they're trying to keep secret from you, and you realize, I don't know, it doesn't sound that awful about it. So basically what they're saying is, according to documents obtained under the Freedom of Information legislation and seen by courts, Google lobbied California regulators for permission to keep minor accident secrets as long as the car was not driving itself at the time. Ron Medford, Director of Safety for Google Self-Driving Car Program, wrote that the regulations should be amended to limit required reporting of accidents involving vehicles operated in autonomous mode, which kind of makes sense. I mean, like, if a dude is driving the car and the car's not driving itself, why should Google be any more required to report that than you or me? Like, you know, outside of, you know, obviously like for legal purposes of, you know, insurance and kind of how, you know, just how any fleet of cars would, you know, when GM is doing, you know, road tests of their 2015 Mustang, they have to report accidents, you know, to the DMV like anybody else would, but they don't have to go through special regulations and clump that into, you know, these special testing stuff. It seems appropriate to me. But, you know, this is one of the things they want to keep secret, you know, just so it doesn't muddy the water. Because it's funny. I mean, like, they talk about the accidents that the cars have gotten into, and they always say that, you know, the only accident, you know, they always have to say, yeah, the cars have gotten into accidents while somebody else was driving the car. And it just seems disingenuous to, you know, to have to to clump that in, you know. But I don't know. Okay. The other thing that they want is California Department of Motor Vehicles, DMV, wants the disengagement reports, which include the location and weather conditions, to help it create driver tests for when autonomous vehicles eventually go on sale to the public. But Google doubts their usefulness.
Make them really hard.
Yeah. This is data not provided, or this data does not provide an effective barometer for vehicle safety. During testing, most disengages occur for benign reasons, not to avoid an accident. He revealed that adding the new feature to Google's self-driving cars could sometimes actually increase the number of disengagements, even if the car's safety improvement overall, even if the car's safety improved overall. Google believes that only accidents that happen while its cars are driving themselves are relevant to the safety, and that handing over huge amounts of disengagement data wastes everyone's time, which is interesting. And but they also said that what their concern is that there's going to be an incentive to not disengage. It is the big concern, is that by including these disengagement reports, you're actually more likely to have people do unsafe things when they know better. And especially because they're saying it's like it has to do with, you know, the car will kick off because you're doing these huge battery of like software updates all the time. And sometimes bugs are in there and they're beta testing. It'd be basically like saying having to report tons of different stuff that they're trying to, you know, the legislation is meddling right now with the normal R&D beta testing, alpha testing level stuff, which is an interesting dilemma as you develop things, because you wouldn't force companies normally to talk. You know, if a medical device company is in alpha testing, they're running their device on pig hearts in preparation to work on human hearts. You do report a lot of that stuff. And on the flip side, when Apple is developing a new phone for that hopefully they'll sell to government agencies, and they're doing alpha testing on their new iOS, they don't report any flaws, any security flaws that they come up with. You know, so it's like, where's the line there? You know, do you force automated driving cars to act more like, you know, the medical device field, where you need really, really great and thorough records for every step along the path? Or do you more focus on, you know, like you would treat any other tech company, which is sort of the fast paced, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting dilemma, but Google's obviously on the side of they want to keep it more techy. But the other really interesting thing that I thought would happen this week,
Now it does not make sense to share that information.
I think so. I agree.
When they're ready to bring it to market and they need to get approval and all that stuff, okay, yeah, let's run it through a battery of tests and then we'll determine.
Yeah.
Not right now.
I agree. And I think it's one of those things where it might even make sense to, you know, once you kind of go through your first round of getting a car and a set of, you know, technologies approved, to then increase the level of expectations of record keeping. I think it makes sense to at some point get to the point, yeah, you do got to keep disengagement records, you know, 20 years down the road as you're developing new technologies and it's easier for other companies to get involved and jump on. But, you know, when you're first starting out, like, you know, they are clear that, you know, I keep using the, you know, we always talk about beta testing, and this is far from beta testing. This is alpha testing. This is, they're still building stuff as they go.
It's development stage.
It's so early that a lot of it is just useless information, and I'm sympathetic with Google's position on this. But the other really interesting thing here, another secret that they've been keeping from us, is that the Google cars designed to break the law. They are intentionally programmed to be able to exceed speed limits by up to 10 miles per hour, 16 kilometers per hour if you're in the UK, according to the project's lead software engineer. And this is one of those fascinating little dealios that, you know, there's a, you know, slow cars are supposed to stay to the right, passing lanes on the left, and, you know, the classic thing. And why is that? Well, it's because if you're going faster than the pace of traffic, it's dangerous. And there's a famous graph of number of accidents based on speed delta. So if you're going faster or slower than the pace of traffic, how many accidents do they have? And the fewest accidents occur when you're at the average pace of traffic, so you're keeping pace. But the curve goes up in equal directions at equal rates for going too fast as it does for going too slow. And it greatly increases the number of accidents if you're going 10 miles per hour slower than the pace of traffic. And so if everybody's speeding, which everybody's speeding, they want the Google cars to be able to keep up with the pace of traffic. So they don't actually obey the traffic laws in a strict manner. They keep up with the pace of traffic, and that allows them to go as fast as 10 miles per hour. And I think the funniest part about that is I remember our parents teaching us this when we were young, that the whole, like, really and truly, it's like if it says 65, you can go 74 and no cop's going to pull you over. You know, like, unless it's really reckless. Like, you can go up to but not exceed 10 miles per hour and still be pretty safe. You'll be fine. And I, you know, it's one of those, it's such a weird world we live in that, like, that's incredibly illegal. And yet it's, you know, it's so.
The nice part about it is as more autonomous vehicles join the roadway, you'll watch those average speeds come back down to the target speed limit.
Or you'll see the speed limit walk up to what the,
Well, in theory, you shouldn't, because, you know, they're not going to match it. They're going to get close to it, right?
Right.
And so, which means they'll be a little under, which means the average will come down.
Well, no. What I'm saying is you'll see – I think what you'll see is you'll see – yeah, as more and more autonomous cars come on, you'll see them start approaching the speed limit, so the average speed will start to slow down. And then once you'll hit some sort of a tipping point where everybody will be like, these cars can go way faster than they're going.
Right.
And then
right.
You'll see the speed limit actually go up, and you'll watch the average
speed limit go up, not actual speed. Or, you know, yeah. I got you. Legally.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I would agree.
So, it's cool. It's interesting. It's just, it's interesting looking at the, you know, what they struggle with when they're developing cool new technology.
Yeah. Yeah. They're always good at finding those weird, like, non-intuitive things. You're like, yeah, we need to speed sometimes.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I thought that.
It is interesting.
What if you could put in a, you know, if it can sense, like, because it knows your calendar and you have a meeting coming up and it knows how long it takes you to get there. It's like, we should probably speed. He's running late.
Yeah.
There's, yeah. They go. That's the manual override. Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. I have found myself now, like, I'll be in traffic going slow, and I'll be like, "Oh my gosh, I wish I didn't have to drive right now. That'd be so cool."
Right. But yeah.
Someday, we'll get there. Cool, man. Good show.
Definitely.
A lot of things. It's kind of weird. August, nothing huge, which just means it's a bunch of little tiny things.
Yeah.
But not next week, but I think the following one? Or
it's a couple of weeks yet, so we'll get overly excited on.
So I'm already excited because I already have an email. Where are you? From Gazelle. They've already sent me an email saying, you should lock in your price by November 9th to take advantage of, I love this, of this special offer. Like, it's your same offer as always.
Yeah, well, it's and it's always special.
Yeah, I know. So I'm like, yep, I'm going to – September 8th, I'm doing that, dude.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. So I feel like – so just so as we look ahead, next week is Labor Day. So we actually have to figure out when we're going to do the show.
So we do.
Because I'm already doing it Monday night, I suppose. But we could do it Sunday night too, or Saturday. I don't care. I actually don't care.
Okay.
We'll talk about it offline. But for the audience's sake, next week, be a normal week. I'll do my best to. I probably will let a few rumors slip in because, you know, it's me. I follow the rumors. But yeah. Definitely Sunday, August 31st, no hold bars. Just going to be all rumors. Just, you know.
Good to know.
It's coming. No, wait. That's not true. No, it's 2 weeks. We got 3 shows before it's all rumors because it's September 9th.
Sweet.
Oh, whatever. Never mind, guys. I can't even get my rumors right.
Yeah, pathetic. All right, everybody. Let's hear. I got to change my audio to make this work. So thanks for joining us. We really do appreciate it. My name is James Furlow. My brother over here is Matthew Furlow. And we will talk next time. Thank you.